You simply can't escape Valentine's Day. All you have to do is walk into a store about 2 weeks after Christmas, and much of the Christmas merchandise has been replaced by hearts and flowers and chocolate. We'll leave those on the store shelves and go in search of some honest talk about love and sexuality. Our guests this hour are uniquely positioned to engage in such talk. Julie Gillis is one of the co-founders of Bedpost Confessions, which, as the name implies, encourages people to tell stories from the bedroom in front of an audience. Mario Fragoso is the co-founder and currently the interim executive director of the Lotus Rising Project, which is an organization based in Southern Oregon that formed more than a decade ago to help young lesbian, gay, bi, trans, queer, and questioning people to find answers, and ultimately, hopefully, themselves. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thanks for having us.
Mario, let's start with you and the birth of Lotus Rising. Was the, there must have been some sense of a lack that created the desire to form the project in the first place.
Definitely. So at the time, I was a youth myself, and we're a group that we're meeting monthly with a counselor, Delaine Dew, who facilitated the group for us. And we found that there was a lack of support for the LGBT community, and specifically youth in the area. So we decided as a group that we wanted to do something about it. And that's how Lotus Rising Project was kind of born. It was from an idea of a bunch of youth meeting in a living room. And now we're the organization that we are that has support that reaches out across Southern Oregon.
Youth as in high school age?
The youth ages range between around 14 to 25.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of ages at which a lot of upheaval in any life, really, and more so if it becomes about sexuality.
Definitely. And we're starting to grow now as an organization and starting to incorporate more adult services as well.
So let's talk about Bedpost Confessions. This is born in Austin, Texas. How many years ago now?
We began the series in 2010, so about 7 years ago. And it was a monthly show, which attracted poets and storytellers, both storytellers of fiction and also personal narrative, and quickly became an incredibly popular show. We have hundreds of people that come to see it every time we produce it.
So you and how many co-creators were involved?
There were four of us at the time, Rosie, Mia, Sadie, and myself. And we just saw the lack of a storytelling show in the region that had to do with sexuality, gender, relationships. So we just built it, and they showed up.
How difficult in any society, and of course this is Austin, Texas we're talking about here, which is perhaps a little more free-floating than some places, but how hard to get people to talk honestly about love and sexuality, particularly behind closed doors, I guess, as the old expression went?
Well, you know, we were surprised. We didn't exactly know what was going to happen. We found very quickly, though, that personal narrative was the most popular storytelling form. People of all, you know, ages, of all genders, of all orientations have had some kind of situation that's either beautiful and perfect or mortifying and horribly hilarious or educational, and people wanted to share. And we quickly found kind of a sweet spot of stories that were vulnerable, funny, poignant, and really kind of exemplified the human condition when it came to sex.
And so is there now a Bedpost Confessions Ashland chapter, given that you started in Austin and you live in Ashland now?
Yes, there is. We've done two shows here, one in October and one in January. And they were both, I think, really fun, funny shows with poignant, sweet stories and a lot of confessions from the Ashland community. We have a show in Boulder, Colorado as well, and a couple of shows up in Canada.
The Canada ones I find really interesting. Those are not called Bedpost Confessions. They have a slightly different name.
No. A friend of ours from Austin, Professor Kim Tallbear, moved to Edmonton to teach Indigenous studies, and she is Lakota. And she decided to do a decolonializing of sexualities in the Indigenous population, working with Native peoples in Edmonton and in Saskatoon. And she calls it Teepee Confessions. And they gather and they tell stories in a slightly different way, but they love it, and it's been very successful up there.
Does it help to put some humor into the process of talking about stuff in the bedroom? I mean, things that people are generally not very comfortable talking about. It seems like you come from a place of humor.
Well, I have a background in theater and improvisational comedy, so funny is something that I'm pretty comfortable with. But I think human beings are just kind of messy creatures, and we make big messes when we're hilarious about it. And so if you can tell a story and find that human moment where other people can connect to you, often people are laughing, sometimes crying and laughing at the same time. We've done versions of the show where we talk about other topics as well, not just sexuality, but the body, pregnancy, bullying, different kinds of topics. And humor comes up in those stories too, because when you're bearing witness to someone on stage and they're telling you what's really going on in their heart or their pelvis, you tend to laugh together and you give them great support.
Mario Fregoso, I hear a fair amount of crossover here with the kinds of things I think you've done over the years with the Lotus Rising Project, just to get people to talk very frankly and honestly about things going on with themselves, their lives, their bodies.
Yes, definitely. We actually have a program, the Youth Empowerment Theater, actually just merged with Planned Parenthood and formed a group called Rev Rising. And they use theater as an outlet to communicate and share different topics on sexuality and drug use and multiple amount of issues that are sometimes hard to talk about. And just breaking the ice, even with humor, really allows them to connect with the audience and get that information shared in a fun way.
I noticed that that merging with Planned Parenthood. How did that come about?
So it really came about with both of the organizations had a theater program. Actually, our program actually originally migrated from Planned Parenthood, and then they started another program. And it seemed like a really good way. Kendra Laffery, our coordinator for that program, met with Lauren from Planned Parenthood, and they decided kind of pulling the talent of youth and merging both of those talents together made the program stronger. So it really allowed to have more youth participate in the program and also a stronger reach.
The theater part of it, though, gives what to the performers? Is it a chance for them to sort of step outside of themselves and be a different person for a bit?
It is, and it also is, it allows them to build some self-confidence, and through that, they build tools that they're able to bring with them later in life, whether that be public speaking or even just those self-confident skills of, you know, being confident in what they're doing.
Love, sex, and sexuality, the topics here on the Jefferson Exchange on this Valentine's Day. You can get the chocolate and flowers from somebody else. We're talking to Mario Fregoso, who is the co-founder and currently the interim executive director of the Lotus Rising Project. Julie Gillis is the co-founder of Bedpost Confessions, which she has created a chapter in Ashland now after she started it in Austin with three friends 7 years ago. You can join our conversation on the Jefferson Exchange. What kinds of subjects would you like to talk about and don't, because they're just not considered generally acceptable conversational behavior about love and sex and sexuality? 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. And I want to let people hear a little bit about what goes on in Bedpost Confessions. And here's the first of the one. They will call this Confession Bedpost. So let's hear what this the person has to say.
I confess, I told my husband that he needed to be more of a dom in our relationship. His first act in the role was to tell me to get him a beer. I used my safe word.
All right, not perhaps what people expected when I first heard about domination kinds of behavior, but talk about the process then, Julie Gillis. What goes on as these shows get put together? Mm. I gather there's a fair amount of polishing, almost TED Talk style.
Oh, absolutely. We had put out the word originally some 7 years ago in posters, in ads on Craigslist, I think, everywhere we could find, and the Austin Chronicle, you know, looking for submissions for writers. And people turned in pieces of work. We usually have a certain limit, 1,500 words or so, and then we review them. And we work with the writers to polish the work itself. If it's, you know, to make sure it really fits our particular ethos. And if they are not a performer, maybe they've never been on stage before, we do coaching with them so that they feel comfortable, and curate the show so that there's, if not a theme, then everything fits together really well, and have a little rehearsal where people read through what they're doing, and then we get up on stage in front of the audience, and hopefully everything goes like clockwork, which, you know, if you produce a show well, it usually does. We have music, we have slideshows in the Austin show with little factoids. We really believe in ethics and education kind of wrapped up in an entertaining package. So at a show, you'll get your questions answered if you need advice, or if you've got concerns about something happen, or if you just want to see something fun and learn about the world.
What level of audience participation is there, if any?
There is actually, I think, a really sweet kind of audience participation. We originally created cards, which are confessions cards. They literally say, "I confess" on the cards themselves. Audience members get to write something on them. Now, it could be a question. How do I try this particular sexual activity safely? It could be a question or a concern like, my boyfriend really wants me to do XYZ, but I'm terrified of it and I don't want to. What do I do? And it could be something braggy, which we do get a lot of brags, like my brother's sister's partner's boyfriend's motorcycle. I don't know, just, you know, something that's really over the top in terms of some amazing experience they've had. So the audience gets to write those down and then we read them out loud. So no one in the audience knows who wrote it. And it's a little bit of a ritualistic kind of confession, really. We get to sort of say to the world something that you want off your chest.
What do you do for the people who are looking for advice? Or is it because you know, as theater producers, mm-hmm. you're not necessarily equipped to give advice in some of these areas?
Well, interestingly, I think the three of us in Austin certainly were. We wrote about sexuality, studied sexuality.
Two of you blogged on it, right?
Oh, all three of us have blogged mm-hmm. on it at various points, yeah. And so this is kind of a... if not a profession for us, then an avocation, something that we've done from the heart. And so, if there's something that we know we can answer on stage, we will definitely say the best advice, of course, is always be patient, communicate very clearly with your partner, and have good humor about the situation. So we know a lot of books. We know a lot of different educators that we could refer people to. And we improvise and let them know what we think about their question.
Are the people who come to Bedpost Confessions generally people who've been reading and researching and maybe reading blogs like yours? I'm curious to know, because what this all gets down to is the basic question of why we still find it mm-hmm. in a country that is, in theory, a very open society and very free, difficult to talk about fairly simple things of intimacy. We don't even, but you and I were talking just before the show started, what terms we could even use.
Absolutely. We talk, there's a lot of sexuality in our media, but there's not necessarily a lot of open, honest conversation about sexuality.
Exactly my point. We use sex intimacy to sell everything from tires to hamburgers.
Exactly. But we were founded in a pretty puritanical way, and we have a lot of norms and mores that say that, you know, good girls do this and bad girls don't, and alpha men do this and beta men don't, and there's only two genders, and you shouldn't be anything other than A, B, or C, according to some rule book that someone created. Where I'm from, in Texas, there's really little to no sex ed at all in the schools, and the sex ed that does exist requires abstinence-only education. And we had, I think 2 years ago, the third highest rate of teen pregnancy in the nation. So maybe talking to kids about sex and really educating in the way that, say, the Unitarian Universalists and United Church of Christ do with Our Whole Lives as a curriculum, incredible curriculum from kindergarten through the elder years around sexuality. Maybe we'd have a healthier way of looking at our bodies and pleasure and connection.
How does this end up working within the confines of what you do in the Lotus Rising Project, Mario? Because it's not just that the country as a whole has a little bit of difficulty, more than a little bit, talking about sex, but particularly for younger people, as we were just hearing from Julie, the idea of not letting people know too much too soon. And you've got people who are not just questioning the functions, but who they are in relation to sexuality.
Yeah, definitely. And we encourage open conversation about sexuality, and definitely we have programs in place that center around sexuality. So we have a program called SAGA, which is Sexuality and Gender Alliance, and it allows for open conversation with a therapist and with each other about their sexuality. And as Julie was talking about, our society has put labels on things. And that is something that some people are rejecting, or maybe the alphabet soup is getting longer as opposed to, you know, what different people would like to be identified as. And it's ongoing, and it's constantly changing, and it's evolving in terms of how we're speaking about things, and even the understanding in, like, general society with that. Even for me, coming in as the executive director, trans issues are a huge issue right now that we fully support and we want to be engaged in. And I had to have some education myself, especially when it came to language and how people like to be addressed or what their pronouns may be.
Pronouns, I noticed. Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of those are at the website for Lotus Rising.
Definitely, and we want to respect of what people are asking as far as how they would like to be recognized and making it a general conversation that mm-hmm. everyone's aware of and bringing it up and educating people.
I think for me, when you talk about a person, you talk about all of the parts of them, what they like to eat, what kind of work they want to do, what kind of school they want to go to, and their sexuality and who they're attracted to and how they see themselves and what gender role, what gender expression, all of those things are things that don't necessarily get acknowledged. So we're finding, I think, over time, over the last 30, 40 years, and currently, more people really demanding that their bodies be part of the equation of conversation.
Frank, talk on love, sex, and sexuality here on Valentine's Day with Julie Gillis, who is the co-founder of Bedpost Confessions, which began in Austin, Texas 7 years ago. She now lives in Ashland and has opened a new version of it here. Mario Fragoso is the co-founder and currently the interim executive director of Lotus Rising Project, which supports LGBTQ youth in Southern Oregon. You can join the conversation. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a phone call from Chuck in Klamath Falls. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, thank you. As a 91-year-old person, I've lived through attitudes toward sexuality for that whole period, and I'm most excited and thrilled by hearing both of your parties today. I would like to just reference one thing, and that is the OWL program, Our Whole Lives, which is offered by the Unitarian Universalist Association. And us addressing the whole issue of sexuality in regard to, well, liberal religion, but also just life. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Chuck. That was amazing to hear. And you're right. OWL is an incredible program, and it is a beautiful program to have in a spiritual sense because it really does integrate for youth and for adults that our bodies are holy and beautiful things.
When Lotus Rising Project started, and I wonder if it was sort of like an oasis and if there are more organizations and structures that have come up to support you a bit over the years, as the issues have become more widespread, more recognized, and also as there have become greater freedoms like same-sex marriage within the last couple of years.
Definitely. Within the area, there are other organizations that support our specific community. For instance, Rainbow Elders is an organization within the Rogue Valley that helps support seniors in our area and making sure that all of their issues are being addressed. But then we also have partnerships with organizations like Basic Rights Oregon. Just recently, Lotus Rising Project endorsed a trans bill, HB 2673, and that bill specifically is addressing trans people's ability to have gender markers change and their ID, and really making that process easier. They have enough barriers that they're already dealing with, we really wanted to show our support, and one of the ways to do that was partnering with Basic Rights Oregon, and we're going to be lobbying and taking some of our youth up to Salem in March. So it's kind of exciting to have that social justice aspect that we can bring, and also we do two social justice trainings a year, teaching youth and community members. We're going to be opening it up to the community this year, especially with the administration that's happening right now, to give people tools to really engage, not only on a local level, but also federally. But we want them to be able to have the tools to be able to reach out to their representatives and know how that they can do that in a constructive way that they can be heard.
Oregon, a very different political climate, obviously, from a place like North Carolina, which passed HB2, the so-called bathroom bill. But, I mean, do you monitor things that go on in other states to see if there might be ramifications or repercussions within Oregon?
We do. We're aware of them. I wouldn't say that we are actively engaged in going out and addressing issues within other states. But those issues do have ramifications that kind of ripple across. And speaking of the bathroom bill, there was a protest at Hedrick Middle School in regards to bathrooms being opened, and that was, I believe, an executive order that was sent down by President Obama that was opening up bathrooms.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
It started with a protest against that, and we actually had youth in the area who took the initiative and organized a counter protest to that the next day, which had larger numbers. And it was encouraging to me to see the youth really take an active and engaged approach and start that counter protest on their own. And then we were able to be there as a backup resource and give them any tools they need. And then after that, in partnership with Unite Oregon, we did a bathroom forum that was open to the community to have an open discussion and share information.
What is that like, though? I mean, to be in the business of trying to get people to think more openly about people's identities, how they see themselves, who they love, and yet it ends up in this realm of, like, which bathroom are you going to use?
It is difficult.
It is difficult. I think, I mean, one of the reasons that I think storytelling is an incredible forum for political activism is because you're hearing real people tell real stories about their real lives. A few months ago, I think it was perhaps a year ago in Austin, Jack Darling did a piece about being trans and being bashed on the streets of Austin and the effect that had on his life as he was transitioning, the effect that magic, and he's a magician, a really good one, the effect that magic had helping him reclaim becoming a person of the public again. So that I think that affects the audience members. They may think differently, vote differently.
Love and sex and sexuality, the topics here on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll keep it going for a few more minutes. You hear Julie Gillis, who's the co-founder of Bedpost Confessions, now in Ashland. Mario Fragoso is a longtime Southern Oregon resident, co-founder, and now interim executive director of the Lotus Rising Project. Keep the questions coming. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange and visit more with our guests in a minute 10. It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. A reminder, you can find us online at jeffexchange.org. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter at Jeff Exchange. And you can take part in the program as it happens. We're going to pick up our conversation on love and sex on this Valentine's Day, sexuality as well. Our guests believe in talking frankly about sex and sexuality and do so through their organizations. Julie Gillis is the co-founder of Bedpost Confessions, born in Austin, Texas, 7 years ago. She now lives in the Ashland area and has been doing Bedpost Confessions here as well. Mario Fragoso is the co-founder and currently the interim executive director of the Lotus Rising Project, which aims to help LGBTQ youth find their place in the world. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I mean, ultimately, in a way, you're both really involved in education. I mean, raising awareness so that people know more about things they want to know a whole lot more about.
If you think about sex ed in the public schools in the U.S., it's hit or miss, depending on the state. So a lot of adults have to figure things out on their own. They have to find books, maybe, or they go into the internet, which may have really great information, and it also may have information that will lead people in a direction that might not be safe for them or healthy. And so having a place to not only tell stories but to ask questions is great. Ashland is incredibly lucky that it has a store like Love Revolution, which is on Main, and it's a beautiful, warm, welcoming space with great books and great resources and classes. So not all cities have that, where you can actually literally go in and ask questions of someone who has, experience and education to really get you what you need.
We have some clips from Bedpost Confessions, and I want to play another one of them now. This is the one called Ebony Bedpost, and this is about Ebony Stewart talking about teaching sex education.
I teach a grant-funded, evidence-based abstinence plus curriculum called It's Your Game, Keep It Real. But that's a lie, because we don't keep it real, okay? We don't cover masturbation, abortion, adoption, rape, homosexuality, or porn. And there's, I know, we got a lot of feelings about it. Let me tell you why. So one of those reasons is because we live in Texas, okay? Have you forgotten? We live in Texas. So that's the first reason. Second reason is because there's a lot of shame wrapped around those topics.
So that's interesting. So let's put the local politics aside. The fact, shame, why is there shame in some cases in talking about things that we have never even participated in or done yet, do you suppose, either one of you?
Well, I don't know about you, but if one of the first things you hear when you're a little kid is, don't touch that, over and over again, or wash your hands after the bath, you get a lot of shameful messaging, really. That's dirty, or good girls don't let their skirts fly up, or whatever. Or good girls don't let boys chase them, or whatever.
Go back another decade, and you have black patent leather shoes, and don't wear those because boys will look at the reflection and all that stuff. You know?
And I also think it's a lack of conversation. It's taboo. It's something that's not talked about. A lot of times, when I hear the conversation that parents want to have that conversation, the school shouldn't be having that conversation. I hear that a lot, but the problem is, they're not having those conversations.
I've had parents ask me if I would have those conversations with their kids. And I'm like, no, I'm not certified in that.
And it's interesting the way that it's being approached. Like Julie and I were having a conversation the other day when we met for coffee, and I happened to be watching a clip from The View. and they were having a conversation where one of the hosts of the show was at a school function. And she went into the women's restroom. And when she went in there, there was a basket of condoms. And she was horrified that was there. One, because she wasn't told about it. And two, because she felt like that was promoting the youth at the school that her child attends to have sex. And I was kind of a little bit horrified because that was not the take that I would get at all. I mean, it's really about if they're going to have sex, it's preventing
STIs and pregnancy.
Exactly. And those are conversations that I think that aren't happening. Even the conversation that they were having on that show on that national platform, it felt awkward. And they were even having trouble, interacting with each other about the topic. So there's definitely not enough conversation around it.
And I think even more interesting, I've thought about that story you told me. I think if there was a basket of condoms in the boys' restroom, a dad going in there would be like, yeah, that's good. But women, that means that a girl picking up a condom is going to be, a female identified youth is going to be picking up a condom and taking charge of their sexuality. And that's something that is definitely, no one knows how to manage that.
Still, you think? Different rules for females.
Clearly, that was right on the national broadcast.
Yeah.
How much greater a degree of difficulty then, Mario, in when it's not heterosex, when you're talking about people who are finding not just perhaps their first sexual experiences looming, but not sure what they want those to be.
It's difficult in some aspects, and it's easier in others. So it depends on the audience, really, for us. Like, for instance, there was a local school. I'm not going to name any names with the school, but where we were trying to go in for some education. But in order to do that, we had to agree to certain rules. So there were certain words that we weren't allowed to say. And sex was one of them. Different language around being gay. So there were limitations on the vocabulary that we could use, which makes it difficult to have an open conversation.
Julie, I'm curious if doing bedpost confessions has changed the way you talk about sex with your kids.
Absolutely it has. I believe that there should be conversation from their youth forward about what the body parts are called and how to keep them clean and healthy and that their body belongs to them, and consent based language is really important no matter what games they're playing with their friends and peers. And as they've grown, if they've asked me a question, I've tried to answer it honestly. In fact, I actually did a piece about that at Bedpost a few years ago, which was one of those pieces where I'm in the car driving and the son is asking me about ejaculation or something. And I'm like, oh my God. And then you have to get the words out of your mouth because you have practiced them. And what they want to know and where I draw a line and where I point them in directions of, say, Lotus Rising, which my older son is a member of. He's part of Rev Rising. He's going and doing all kinds of good work there. And he was a Unitarian, so he got really good. He's been getting really good education. They know where to look. They know what they can ask. They know they won't be shamed. They know that they'll get really good advice from both parents. And they also know they can have privacy. And they don't have to tell us things, too. And that's, I think, the other side of it, is that they're their minds and hearts, and their stories belong to them, and their bodies belong to them. So I can't force them to necessarily be who I think they should be. They get to make choices.
We got some laughs from the first two clips that we played from Bedpost Confessions. I want to play another one that kind of gets back into the zone where Lotus Rising Project exists. And this is Holly Lorca's story of self-discovery during her first long-term relationship. So here's Holly's brief story.
I was numbed into submission and stayed engaged for over a year until one night he kissed me while we were sitting near the Christmas tree, and I became furious at him for not being a girl. For this perfect life not being enough. I knew it was over right that second.
So the question to Mario is, I mean, do people come to you with stories like this? Like, wow, I had no idea until recently. Or, I mean, how long does it take for someone to start feeling the things they're feeling and then find their way to Lotus Rising Project?
So I think everyone has their unique story. So there isn't a one answer to that. There are people their whole lives who have known but have not admitted it to themselves. And then there are people who come later in life to the realization. They knew that something was different, but they weren't able to put a label on it or identify exactly what that may have been. And we have people from all over the spectrum as far as age. Lotus Rising Project really primarily focuses on youth at this point. We are slowly expanding into those adult years. But one thing that I've noticed is it seems to get younger and younger as far as the realization of maybe what their sexuality is, or even trans youth. Unfortunately, because we just currently at the moment don't have the resources, we have gotten a lot of contact from parents with younger children in the range of 7 to like 12 that are identifying as a trans youth. And we're not equipped at this point for that age range to really be able to support them without being able to refer them to someone else. So it's definitely something that we're looking at addressing, but it seems to be getting younger.
And I think if Holly Lorca's stories, she's done six or eight stories, maybe more, for Bedpost, and her stories really frame a trajectory of a person who knew pretty young both that she wished she was a boy and that she was interested in girls. And they're just heartbreaking and funny. She's an incredibly funny performer. So I think a lot of people do know, and they are afraid to tell. They are afraid to tell. And she got engaged and was doing this trajectory, right? And risking family, risking friends when she came out. And these are families now who are recognizing and trying to really pay attention to what children are telling them earlier and earlier, because kids don't lie about things. They know things, and they don't necessarily have the
it's kind of an innate honesty,
right? And, right, they're like
about that level of things,
right? Right.
Now.
So, I think it's going to be really important to invest support and resources to help families.
Absolutely.
What? When is the next? Is there a planned or scheduled next Bedpost Confessions for Ashlyn?
I'm hoping it'll be in April or May. We'll certainly do one in October for
Pride.
Yeah, Pride.
Bedpost actually was kind enough. They joined the lineup for this last year's Pride. Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of your kickoff in the Rogue Valley.
It was a little sooner than I thought we were going to do it, but it was really exciting, and I had a very warm welcome from the community here.
Okay. And so how do people find you at Bedpost Confessions?
It's bedpostconfessions.com, and we are on Facebook as Bedpost Confessions Ashland.
And how do people find you at Lotus Rising Project?
We are also on Facebook or Twitter, and then you can reach us at lotusrisingproject.org.
LotusRisingProject.org and BedpostConfessions.com.
Com, yes.
Okay. All right. Good to have you both here today. Mario Fragoso is the co-founder and interim executive director currently of the Lotus Rising Project, and Julie Gillis is one of the four co-founders of Bedpost Confessions, and she has pulled it up from Austin with her, left some behind, but started a version in Ashland as well. Good to have you both here today on the Jefferson
Thank you.
Exchange.
Thank you.